Hi, Kevin McCullough. I love to have every day a daily dialogue about what is going on in the news. But as we have gone through a couple of pretty momentous years following the last election, there's increasingly more attention being given to the upcoming election, both of 2018 and of 2020. And with that in mind, I'm really honored to have my next guest back to the microphone, though it is not very long in between her regular visits with us at Kevin McCullough Radio, because she joins us every Monday already. But her new book is titled Mad Politics, Keeping Your Sanity in a World Gone Crazy. And Dr. Gina Loudon is her name, and here she is. Dr. Gina, welcome back. Good to see you.
It's an honor to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Now, I know that since the election of 2016, you and I have talked on just about an every week basis, and sometimes even more than that, and sometimes off the air, just the two of us, about the changing force and face of the political process and kind of what we are seeing play out. Most recently, the Supreme Court hearings that are taking place in the United States Senate, and kind of the absurdity of what has become the theater of our elective politics. But it seems to me to be a morphing or an evolution, if you will, that has not gone in a particularly good direction for the country, a healthy direction for the country. Part of that because of the need for a disruptor to come into office, but much more to blame for most of this, I believe, is the response to someone that has taken the wrecking ball to the establishment. What's your take as you look back on the last 2 years of where we're at in the issue of politics and elective office in general? Are we a healthier place where we are now? Are we not? And what's the root causes of it?
Well, I think half of us are much healthier, and I think the world as a whole is much healthier thanks to a thriving Trump economy and all economic indicators and national security indicators being on a high record uptick. But I think there's a small, very vocal segment of our society that is very confused. And literally collectively, I think that some of them have digressed into madness. And I write about that in my book, Mad Politics, because I think what has happened, Kevin, is that for so long, the politically elite could use these people, these Americans, to sort of maintain their political class, their power structure, and their financial gain. They could use them for all of those things. They became very accustomed to having that apparatus in place. And then came this disruptor, this blue-collar billionaire, who won this election kind of out of nowhere, and then did something that was even more upsetting to them, and that is that he kept his promises. And I think that has made them truly crazy in a way that I'm not sure we've seen many times, in certainly in American history, but many times in history itself. The other thing that happened was a bloodless revolution, and I write about that also in my book, Mad Politics, and how that was accomplished. And so I think that people are used to revolutions being very bloody. This one wasn't, at least not from our side. And right. So the other side, I don't think, has any idea how to accomplish what they want without violence. And that's why you see that.
Mm-hmm. Let me drill down, though, on something that you said, because I want to make sure that I understand the full import of what you're saying. You said that they've gone crazy. I tend to believe that it's not as much a psychosis as much as it is a belligerent rebellion against the people that elected the current president, and an unwillingness, almost in a criminal sense, a premeditated sense, against anyone who disagrees with them. Are we both right? Am I wrong? What's going on in the mind of those people, the Cory Bookers and the Kamala Harris? I mean, Cory Booker just today, the day we're taping this, just said minutes before we went on the air that he is willing to personally release 102,000 confidential documents that have confidential status placed over them. And mm-hmm. that would be a criminal violation. It would be a violation of Senate rules. And there's this kind of like, I just don't care. I'm going to do what I want to do because, and then you use the word crazy, but I'm asking, is it more sinister than that?
I think from the elite and the establishment, it is sinister. And if I said anything otherwise, I misspoke. My point is, I believe that the establishment inside Washington, D.C., on both sides of the aisle, are so desperate to cling to their power and their money that they've become so accustomed to that they use crowds of people funded by Soros who literally have collectively lost their minds. They're willing to parade around in pink hats the day after inauguration, Kevin. They're willing to make speeches about bombing the White House. They're willing to throw drinks in the face of a young teenager sitting at a Whataburger because he has a Make America Great Again hat on. They're willing to bloody someone simply because they're a Trump supporter, to kick our press secretary out of a restaurant where she wanted to have dinner with her family on a weekend. I mean, these are not the acts of sane individuals, Kevin. This goes way beyond a lack of civility. This goes to a lack of sanity. And I really believe we are in a place where they have so dehumanized this, and I speak to this and I explain the whole process in Mad Politics. They have so dehumanized us that they don't even realize that what they're doing is treating people this way. They don't think we're human. That's not sane, Kevin.
Well, and I just, I guess, and you're the one with all of the pedigree and the clinical experience and the ability to kind of understand human behavior. That's why I love having this conversation with you, because I keep comparing it to what I know. All right. So I'm a dad. I've got kids. I know the difference when they are genuinely confused about something and when they are purposefully, angrily, being passive aggressive or, you know, in some other way acting out to legitimately hurt one another. And it's something that, I don't know, I guess that around the John McCain funeral, there was a lot of discussion in the press about, you know, and I think it's totally revisionist history. They say, oh, we missed the days when politics was so nice. I don't ever remember it actually being that nice. I always remember people fighting for what they believed in. But what I didn't see, at least on the surface, was the willingness of the far left to be so, what I would say, near criminal or murderous or treasonous or whatever you want to be, you know, extreme adjective you want to put in there, that I think has to go a good degree beyond just, you know, crazed in a certain way. I mean, and I know that as you're the expert, so that's why I want to leave it with you at the table there. You break down the what you call the crazy in three different ways: the good, the bad, and the cure in the book. And I think this is great. By the way, it's Mad Politics, Keeping Your Sanity in a World Gone Crazy, Dr. Gina Loudon, and it's published by Regnery. We love those guys. That means Gina's officially on the payroll of the Salem Corporation, so we're good to have, we're glad to have
How
her
about that?
As part of the family, not just a guest anymore. But Gina, it really did start, and I kind of got ahead of myself, it started with a president that came in and said, okay, these two sides have been having all this chance to fix these things for the longest time, and nothing's getting done. And he came in like a wrecking ball and said, it's time to start taking things down, taking things out. Things like drain the swamp became very common usage as it related to the things he was having to go up against. Why was it so necessary at this point in time, where the nation was at, from your perception, that we had to have a disruptor in chief as opposed to a public policy expert in chief or a lawyer in chief or a military leader in chief? Why was Donald Trump the unique guy for this period of history?
Well, because as we've always known, if America is to be destroyed, it will be destroyed from within, and it was being destroyed from within. You have the money like George Soros astroturfing socialism in our country, very literally. We're still seeing it every single day. And, you know, I remember when the president ran, Kevin, this always surprises me to remember this, the words illegal immigration had been made politically incorrect. Do you remember that?
Right.
No politician was able to say the words illegal immigration. It had become a word that you were not allowed to say or you were not going to get on the news shows. And the president came in, like you said, like a wrecking ball, and he spoke to the blue collar guy in the middle of the country who was standing there scratching his head going, wait just a minute. They're shipping our jobs overseas. They're shipping in workers from overseas to take my job. You know, they're charging us, they're charging huge tariffs to take our goods. We're supposed to take all their goods. Everything I look at is made in China or Mexico when I go to buy it. What the heck is going on with my country? And that's why Donald Trump appealed to them. So it was a very sane process, this bloodless revolution, for most of the rational people that were out there that voted for the president. I would submit to you, just knowing the African-American numbers alone, that this president's popularity, it may be hidden, it may be quiet, but this president's popularity in terms of voters has gone exceedingly higher than any polls are going to tell us. We know that even African-Americans are polling at more than double the amount that voted for this president now in terms of his popularity. So this is going to continue to climb because people are seeing the results of the Trump economy. 4 million jobs, more employed than ever in history, growth at 4.2, stock market off the charts, lowest unemployment for every single minority group you can think of and dream up in your head. And no one's giving him credit for that. And the guy that was standing there scratching his head when the president came down the escalator and said, hey, I think illegal immigration needs to be stopped. We need to build a wall. That same guy, he's still standing there and he's going, that is my president. And he may go back to his union hall on Monday and he may nod in agreement with his union boss who's saying, we got to get rid of this crazy Trump guy who's creating all these jobs in this amazing economy. And oh, by the way, where's ISIS? But he's going to vote for this president again because he likes what he's seeing. And I'm hearing more and more every day from people who say, I don't like his tactics. I didn't vote for him last time, but I love what he's done to our country.
Yep.
Kevin, we're living through the greatest, most prosperous moment in American, in world history. And we need to stop to enjoy it. And that's part of what I wrote about, Mad Politics, too. Stop and enjoy what we have right now. These are the best times ever. And the media, it looks like we're dying if you watch TV every day.
Yeah, and it's just the opposite of what it was in the previous 8 years. It's so ironic. I mean, Gina, you know this. You study history for any length of time. You see cycles and patterns, and you go, oh, okay, we understand what happened there. Well, Obama came to power promising fundamental transformation, and then when it really came down to it, the only thing he actually did, and it wasn't that fundamental, he incrementally moved further and further to the left, and there was a willingness to, you know, to do that with him with the Democratic Party, and so that's what the nation did. But there was nothing fundamental or transformative about his tactics or ideas. Trump has never used that term, fundamental transformation, and yet
no.
He has overwhelmingly transformed American economy, military strength, national security, intense focus on borders and immigration and the safety of the homeland. You look at every single thing that he's let his gaze fall on for any amount of time in terms of attention, and there's something different than it was when he came into office. And we're not even fully 2 years into office yet. I mean, that's the really crazy part of all this. He hasn't even gotten to his midterm election, and it's hard to not have a long list of things that are fundamentally, you know, from the inside, the deepest ingredients of what they are, out, different than they were when he came in. And that's the thing that I want to just relate to you in terms of what you were saying. So yesterday I'm having lunch with a business owner. It's a fairly prosperous business in Queens, New York, not anywhere near Manhattan, way out from the city. They have a little community restaurant and they serve people that are in the area, and they do really well. The son of the owner sits with me and he says, you know, I can't tell people this because of where we live and what we do. He said, but this president, he speaks to me. He speaks to the people that I employ. He talks like one of us, not a fancy billionaire from Manhattan. You're talking about a elbow grease pushing, you know, hardworking guy in Queens that has to labor from early in the morning to late at night just to make the bills and just to make the payroll. But your idea that working guy, that guy that's out there slaving it and endured immense challenge during the Obama years, has a different advocate in the White House now.
That's exactly right. And it is amazing. He really is the blue collar billionaire become president. And he really does. You know, people say to me all the time, you know, unlike Mr. Woodward, who wrote this book based on gossip and innuendo and political fantasy, and unlike this anonymous coward in the failing New York Times, I actually have overlaid my psychological training going back for years through two master's degrees and a PhD and my undergrad. And I have overlaid that template on what I know of this president. I know him in a casual setting at Mar-a-Lago, Kevin, you know this. Right. I know him at the White House. I know him. I know his family. I really know these people. And I've looked at all of this and I've considered even things like his family of origin in mad politics. I considered his birth order, which plays a significant role in our lives. You and I have talked about this with our own children.
Yep.
I've considered his Myers-Briggs type indicator. I overlaid Maslow's hierarchy of needs and talked about where the president falls on that. Early tragedies in his life. What is his drug of choice? Because I believe he has one. We all do in some sort, in some psychological way. Anyway, and so I looked at all of those things, and it's a very honest appraisal of a man who looks exactly like the roadmap that led him to be who he is. And it sort of shatters any ideas that there's any way that this man who accomplishes so much, you remember, I think there was one major accomplishment every 36 hours for the first year and a half of his presidency. There's just no way that a depressed or a distractible even, or certainly not an insane person, could accomplish that. So all of these ridiculous arguments out there by people who don't know him and don't even understand the first thing about psychological behavior, it's rubble. It's nothing more than rubble. And I feel like I proved that in Mad Politics, and the timing just couldn't be better.
Sure. Well, friends, I want you to get a copy. It's called Mad Politics, Keeping Your Sanity in a World Gone Crazy. And all you have to do to see the relevance of what Dr. Gene is talking about is turn on the Senate hearings this week. They'll drive you insane pretty quickly if you just watch 5 minutes of it. But let's delve into this. Section two is the problem with crazy. And there really is. This is where people are angry and they're acting out, and the left feels permission to act out in ways that the right never took the liberties to act out with. I've never seen the conservative movement, and I've been a part of it for as long as I've been in public advocacy. I've never seen the right act in the ways that the left has over the last 2 years. So they're angry. Usually, Gina, the angry people turn out the response, and they fight and get things overturned and done. That's not your prescription for what's going to happen in this fall, I guess.
Yeah, that's a great point. And that's because they've gone so overboard and because they are such a small, loud minority, but they are very small. And I think it's important to keep that in mind. You know, the real people out there, those are the people in your listening audience. They're going to work every day. They're coming home from work. They want to take a family vacation this year. They're trying to save for retirement, for college, those kinds of things. Those are the real people. And they may not say a lot, and they're certainly not going to be in the Kavanaugh hearing shouting, and they're certainly not going to be throwing water in some kid's face or, threatening Rand Paul like his crazy neighbor. They're not those kind of people, but those are the kind of people we're going to read about. And so, you know, yeah, we are a quieter lot. You're not seeing people scream out in the Kavanaugh hearing from our side of the aisle. I don't believe there's been one like that. You're not seeing violence from our side of the aisle. If there are, I imagine it's contrived and few, very few and far between. Because we're really not at a crazy point. We have a president, a leader, who takes shots all day, every single day, and remains unmoved. And that's what drives them crazy. People ask me all the time, what do I think keeps the president up at night? Do I think the Mueller hearings phase him? No. I've seen him sitting, laughing, having a good time with friends right after some of the biggest bombs have dropped that you would think would bring a man down. And I've seen him out with his friends at Mar-a-Lago having a good time, inviting me over the table, asking me how I'm doing when I just heard someone say horrendous things or people betray him like Omarosa did or other things. And he's fine and he's unmoved. But I know what keeps him awake at night, Kevin. And that's that guy that listens to your radio show that didn't have a job under the Obama administration and still can't afford health care because that's not completely fixed, even though the president did remove the mandate part of it. That's that guy who lost a child to an opioid addiction or overdose. You know, those are the kinds of things that make this president stay awake at night and motivate him. And I talked earlier about early tragedy in his life. You know, he lost his brother, Fred, to alcoholism early in life, and it very much affected him to the point where he doesn't drink or smoke, and I don't know of any of his children that drink or smoke. But the president's drug of choice is progress. He loves to, you know, we don't exactly think of him as a progressive, but he is in the ways that matter most, in that he loves to accomplish things for those people that his heart really goes out to. And he loves to give back to a country that he feels has given him so much. And he's in the business of doing that. And he's using his golden years to do it. He doesn't need this job. I'm not even sure he wanted this job, but he felt a calling to this job. And I truly believe this was a God-inspired run. And I'm thankful for it. And that's why I'm going to do all I can to continue to support him and to speak to the people out there who don't have a microphone like you and I have, Kevin. But I just want to assure them that they are on the right track. They're doing the right thing. They are the sane ones in this whole thing. And I try to give some really practical guidance and tips and reasoning and logic in my book, Mad Politics, for those days where maybe they feel like things have gotten a little bit more out of control, because they're going to keep doing what they're doing.
I want to get to that in just a second. I just want to speak to something you said there, because it reminded me of a very important point that I think we need to highlight more often. During the primaries, I was a Cruz guy. You were kind of a Trump supporter, but not necessarily because you just thought he was the most awesome person in the world. You saw the disruptive ability early on, and you said, this has real potential. And we had a lot of discussions about that. And I think if Trump hadn't run, I think Cruz largely would have been seen as an outsider and probably have been the guy that would have kind of filled that mold, but not anywhere to the degree or to the impact or to have the punch that someone who is as successful as President Trump was in the private sector, to be able to come to the table and be able to just not take any, like, he takes guff off no one. So there was this real projection of strength through the election. Then you get into the general election. Of course, people said, hey, it's him or Hillary, and it really became a no decision for most people. But as I noticed amongst friends and pundits and people that I would interact with, one of the things that they kept asking about was motivation. Why is the guy doing it at this time? And I had to keep asking that of people that always assume the worst, because I said, well, what do you think he gets out of this? He has a worse plane. He has a smaller bedroom. There's nothing about his life that is any easier. If he wanted to go play golf, he doesn't have to be running the free world in order to be able to do that. He owns golf courses all over the world. He could just spend the rest of his life doing that every day if that's what he wanted to do. So what's the motivation? And the only logical outcome that you can arrive at with him is that it has to be altruistic. There has to be something about this that he's saying, if I don't do this, it won't get done. So I have to do it, because there is no one else to get it done at this time.
There's no one else.
And when you see what he's gotten done just in 2 years, and he hit the ground running so hard, and you look at every other presidency, at least of my lifetime, and you go, wow, what took other people so long? You really have to come away with saying, okay, and he's making use of every second that he's there, too.
That's exactly right, Kevin. That was the question that brought me over to his side, was motivation. I couldn't think of it. You know what it reminds me of? I know you know. I think it was Chuck Spurgeon, maybe. I'm not sure which pastor it was. You'll know. Who said Jesus was either a liar, a lunatic, or Lord of the universe. And I've always realized those absolutes. I'm sorry, I can't attribute that exactly.
I think it was Lewis, but it may have been Spurgeon. I'll look that up when we're done off the air.
Yeah, and I kind of thought of you know, President Trump in that light. I'm like, he's either really going to sell us down the road, like he's running for the purpose of turning into Hillary once he's elected, and this is all a pack of lies, or he could fundamentally really transform, give us a revolution like we've never seen in this country. He could literally dismantle the establishment, because he'd be held prisoner to no one.
Right.
And that was the moment where I was like, you know, I either have to take a leap of faith here. And then I kept getting this sort of message in my head, you'll know them by their fruits. And I talk about that in my book, Mad Politics, my sort of faith journey that took me to Trump, because I didn't want to like him. I didn't want to like him. He's, you know, Kevin, he's not the kind of person that generally, I mean, I'm from sort of the Midwest.
Hey,
and the
there's
South,
no, there's no argument. There's a little prickly on kind of all sides of it. But the core is what people saw through to.
Yeah. And I ultimately decided he's abrasively honest, and he's loyal to a fault. And I thought, you know what, if those are the worst things that I can think of about him, that I have material evidence of, those aren't the worst things I've ever heard. So if those are, if that's all I've got to contend with, I think I'm going to take a chance here and believe in this guy. And if I'm wrong, well, I tried hard, you know, and I did my best. He has done nothing but prove to me again and again that not only was that a good gamble, but that he really is a person in transformation as well. And I said in my speeches for a year, you know what, I may be wrong about him. I've been wrong before. It won't be the first time. It certainly won't be the last time that Gina Loudon has been wrong. But if I'm not wrong, we are going to get our republic back in ways that we have probably never even dreamed in our lifetimes. And certainly that's what he's proven day after day. The moment he took on the Johnson Amendment, the moment he restored the capital of Israel to Jerusalem, I mean, so many things he's done that have gone unheralded. Massive suicide prevention package last week that didn't get a blip on the radar. And it was a big, big deal. The campaign promises he's kept, he's more than kept his list of campaign promises.
Opioids, MS-13, immigration, ISIS, you know, every single thing you can point to. Like I said, anything that's caught his gaze. If he has given it more than 2 minutes worth of thought, he's changed something. He's improved something about
zero
it.
Zero help from the establishment on either side of the aisle, and zero help from the media other than people like you and me out there pointing to it. And so I'm impressed, and he needs to stay president, and it's important for my kids' future. But I think that the real message of my book is twofold. One, I want people to realize that they are the sane ones. They are the adults in the room, and to continue to be the adults in the room. And sometimes that means inviting a kid to your table and sitting down and finding out what interests the kid and doing a little art therapy or whatever it is that breaks through to that kid, because we are changing minds and changing hearts about the president. Even if we don't like his tactics, we're still able to do that. And number two, I wanted to convince people to enjoy the ride. These are the best, most prosperous times in our entire lives. And I feel like too many people aren't enjoying it because they're being told that we're watching some sort of tragedy on their televisions. I don't think that's true.
But you take a look at the people that are the purveyors of that message, the CNNs of the world, and they've gone to literal last place. I do think there's a natural... and this is for all of the punditry, you know, aristocracy that says, oh, well, this is the way it's always been. This is the way it's going to be in their predictions of even the 18 elections, because I know a lot of people that believe he'll be reelected wholeheartedly. But they're saying that the Democrats are going to come on. And you know what? I think they've ruled a lot of things out. They haven't figured in what he's going to do on the campaign trail. And what I have seen thus far is he's willing to go out and work for people to help them get across that finish line so that he doesn't write off the 2018 elections. But on top of that, where is the message of the other side? What do they have to put forward? Are you going to go to the American people and say, we're going to undo 5% GDP growth? We're going to undo the employment numbers. Okay, you mentioned African Americans. He got 9% on election night. About a year ago, he was at 14%. Earlier this year, he was at 28%. As we live and breathe at this very minute, his approval rating with African Americans is knocking on the back door of 40% right now. That's never happened in my lifetime. So what we are seeing is everybody's kind of understanding that things have gotten better. And despite what the media is trying to tell them, they kind of understand that it wouldn't have happened if somebody hadn't made that decision. Okay, last question, Dr. Gina. The third section of your book deals with the cure for the crazy. You talk about a path back to sanity. What's the most important thing for America? And let me make this a little bit difficult for you. Besides reelecting President Trump, what's the most important thing that America needs to do to find that path and to get there?
Well, the most difficult thing that they need to do is to continue to reach out and love the unlovable. And I talk a lot about that in my book and the way to do that and some small victories that I've had that have brought about transformations, not just in the lives of some people that have had influence, but also in my own life. Whenever you take the time to get to know somebody that you believe is your enemy, and you take the time to love them in spite of that in the ways that really only God can inspire you to do, then you are also going to be left better for that. And so I talk a lot about having a conversation with people that you disagree with and how to have that conversation so that you leave a legacy of civil discourse for your children. You know, we're watching as the left tell their children to go out and hurt people that believe what we believe.
Right.
We have to be better than that all the time. And even though I love that our president is a counterpuncher, and I certainly don't believe in being bullied, I also think that we have a role to play, a diplomatic role, with those on the left who we see are reachable. And I believe that we can know that. And I lay out the ways that you can kind of determine those kinds of people in my book. And I've seen these transformations over and over again. Kevin, I know you have them on your show all the time, where you have a caller like, you made this point, I never thought of it that way, I called in today, you changed the way I think about that. And remind everyone, we don't have to agree on everything to right. agree on some things and work together for the good of those that those things that we can agree on.
And so I think finding that winsome,
but that's the hardest part.
That winsome middle, or not middle, but that winsomeness in trying to win them to the argument is always worth the investment. Anyway, Dr. Gina, we are so grateful that you spent this time with us. Mad Politics, Keeping Your Sanity in a World Gone Crazy. It's by Regnery Publishing. We love those guys. They're our sister company here at Salem Communications. But go out and get it. It's endorsed by everybody, except Kevin McCullough. I didn't see my cover quote anywhere on the front or the back. I looked all through the introduction. I didn't see.
Oh,
didn't
I'm
see
in trouble now.
You're no, you're not.
My publisher about
no, you're
that.
Not, Dr. Gina. Not at all. Hey, congratulations. And we'll talk to you again, as usual, this coming Monday. We'll talk to you then.
Thank you so much, Kevin. Great to be with you. Love your audience. And I always appreciate you having me.
Love you, too. It's Kevin McCullough Radio.